welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we're talking about bad boys, brokers behaving badly. Now, it's been so interesting, Andrew. We've been writing our book. And just for anybody who hasn't heard, we are writing a book about property investment. We've written the first draft and we are editing and rewriting it. We're probably 60% of the way through that. It'll be out sometime next year. And this one came up. How do you tell the difference between a good broker and a bad broker? So during our writing sessions, this one's come up and I thought, you know what, let's talk about this because it is important to note that not every broker is going to be a good broker. And so what we'll talk about in this episode, two things. First of all, what does a bad broker look like in our book? And then what questions can you ask in order to test out your broker as a property investor? And I think it is important to find a good mortgage broker because here's the thing. You're not in the finance industry. Or most people listening to this podcast are not in the finance industry. And even after you've used someone, you may not even know whether the advice that they've given you is good or not. I mean, unless you've listened to 700 podcast episodes or something like that. But it's very difficult to know whether you've got a good mortgage broker or not, even after you've used them, because it's hard to evaluate the advice that you're being given, because that's why you're going to them to get advice, because you're not an expert at this. And so I think there are probably three areas I define what a bad broker looks like. And we'll go back and forth, Andrew, to kind of explain how we define these. But I'd break it down into poor lending advice, poor work ethic, or poor experience in terms of their own experience. So, Andrew, what does poor lending advice look like to you? What are some things that happen in terms of poor lending advice?
Yeah, and actually, just before I get into that, I do just want to say, when we're talking about brokers behaving badly, probably what we're saying is they're not doing anything intentionally incorrect. It's just sometimes maybe they go outside of their scope is probably a big part of it, or maybe they're just not doing things our way. It doesn't necessarily make someone bad, but it's really interesting now. When I'm working with an investor, there was a guy that came in actually just last week and he told me about a structure and he said, oh, I don't think this is right. And I said, no, it's not how I would have done it. He said, I know, I've been listening to your podcast, but I didn't want to say anything to my broker, so I just went with it. It's really interesting. There's so much education that we're putting out there so people can make informed decisions, but it can be a little bit scary saying sometimes, oh, have you got that right to your broker? Because you don't want to seem like a prat.
Look, I do think though, Andrew, that there is variation in any industry. You've got great mechanics, you've got bad mechanics. You've got great builders, you've got bad builders. There is just variation in terms of how qualified people are. And I suppose what we're really trying to do in today's episode is say, well, how do you evaluate whether somebody is at the top of their game or is perhaps newer to the industry or less experienced? So in terms of poor lending advice, what are you seeing in terms of lending advice, which perhaps is not what we would suggest?
So probably a big one is, you know, principal and interest versus interest only. You know, maybe not pushing for that quite as much. There was an investor who came to me recently. They'd purchased through Opus. They'd set up their rental property and their broker wasn't able to get them interest only. And so they had to pay principal and interest. They came to me because they were concerned that they were going to have to sell their property because the cash flow wasn't going to work anymore. And so actually in that case, I introduced them to a new broker who with the same bank managed to get that signed off as interest only. So that was really interesting. Maybe just kind of not understanding the availability of products in the market and maybe, you know, not structuring things appropriately. So I know this is a technical thing, but in the new regime of the tax law that we're going to find with interest deductibility, revolving credit facilities that are paid back and then redrawn, that interest deductibility is lost straight away, whereas with an offset, it's not. So again, you know, if you are an investor and you're wanting a broker that understands all the investment technicalities, then you probably want to make sure that you're using someone like that. And I'll tell you another one that's been really interesting. Recently, an investor came to me and said, hey, look, I've been listening to everything you've said about split banking and I get it and I want to use it, but my broker just doesn't like it. And he said, why do you think that would be? And this is somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but I said, your broker's being lazy, but they probably are. And actually, the interesting thing is this person's got three properties under construction. Now, they're all going to settle at different times. And every time a property settles, it becomes old. And so what I calculated is that the first two properties, there wasn't going to be an issue. But by the time they came to settle their third, their usable equity had been eroded by that change from new to existing. So if the broker doesn't approve via split banking, they're going to have a real problem settling. And so it's these kind of things that I think is poor lending advice. Ed, what about you?
For me, it's about brokers not advising on interest rate risk. So I hate it when a mortgage broker says, here are the rates from a bank, which one do you want to go for? They are willing to offer you 12 months, 2.55%, and for 18 months this, or 3 years this. And I want my broker to give me some advice. Well, how should I be managing my interest rate risk? What have you seen in the past? What are the smartest investors doing that you're working with? Oh, it gets a bee in my bonnet when a broker isn't advising on these sorts of things, because that's why you go to a broker. So for me, it's really important that you don't just get given a list of interest rates from a broker or a bank, but that especially a broker is helping you figure out, well, what is the most appropriate for me? Because otherwise, what are we going to do? We're just going to choose the cheapest one, which may not be the best decision. So I think it is important that brokers are giving that sort of advice. Now, let's talk about the next one. We said we've got poor lending advice. Let's talk about poor work ethic. Andrew, what have you seen from brokers who perhaps maybe don't have the best work ethic?
Okay, so one of the big ones is how brokers are paid. Brokers, generally speaking, receive a commission from the bank for placing your mortgage there. Now, if they do some work on your mortgage and it's already with a bank, generally speaking, they're not going to be paid or paid a small amount. What that can encourage is brokers to move lending unnecessarily. And so that's actually a reason why when we set up Catalyst, we put people on salaries, because we think that if people are on salaries, they're only ever going to be incentivized by doing the best thing by the client. That's a really important thing for us. Now, again, I'm not saying that just because brokers are remunerated that way, they're going to necessarily move your mortgage, but there is that added temptation. The other thing, and look, to be fair, I remember this temptation as a broker myself. It can be really tempting to focus on the easy deals. So you could have a portfolio client with 27 properties with different entities and different banks, and it can take a lot of time just to get another $500,000 mortgage to buy an investment property. That's going to take up a lot more time than just finding $500,000 for a first-time buyer, perhaps. And so you've got to be careful that you are choosing a broker that can focus the time that you need, regardless of how complex your deal is. And, you know, if there is a broker that you really want to deal with and it is going to take them more time and it's not worth their while, then you could always offer to pay them an extra hourly rate for doing that extra work for you.
For me, I think it's really important to push your mortgage broker to give you advice. You know, so if a broker comes to you and says, your lending's really tight, it's going to be hard to get this across the line. Well, don't just leave it at that, because you need this lending, or you want this lending so you can keep investing. So you might say to your broker, hey, look, I get this is tight, but I need you as my broker, as my advisor, to tell me what I need to do to get this through. I need you to find a strategy to best present my mortgage application so I can get it across the line. I mean, look, here's the thing at the end of the day. If you wanted just to be told that your mortgage was tight, you'd probably go to a bank. You'd just submit the application yourself. You yeah. want to know, how am I able to get this lending? And I think you can. I mean, I get you definitely want to be respectful of your broker. You want to be respectful of everybody. And let me be very clear. We are massive fans of mortgage brokers. We love mortgage advisors. But I do think sometimes you can say, well, look, I understand it's tight. I understand that servicing is an issue. I need you to help me develop a strategy so I can get the lending. Now, does that mean using a second tier lender? Does that mean perhaps not using my main bank? Perhaps does that mean that I've got to go and, this is a terrible example, but I was going to say go and ask for a pay rise. I always tend to default to that one. But what are the strategies? Yeah, you do. Do I need to live more frugally for 3 months so that my bank statements are more in line with the minimum living cost? What are the strategies I need to do? And I do think it's important that sometimes you do need to ask those sorts of questions, and especially when perhaps your mortgage advisor is not giving you advice. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Let's get into the last topic, which is poor experience. And this is about experience and what they're giving advice in. And Andrew, talk to us about this. I know you've got a great example.
Yeah, actually, I see this all the time. Often people stepping outside of the area of expertise. So every now and then I'll hear an investor say to me, oh, my broker said I couldn't claim depreciation or something to that effect. And then they're essentially giving tax advice and they've got a snippet of information, i.e. depreciation was done away with in 2010, but don't understand the complexities of things like chattel depreciation. So if your broker's giving you tax advice, I think that's probably not a good thing. Actually, just over the weekend, one of the investors that I'm working with sent me an email and he said, what do you think of these properties? I was listening to the Ashburton podcast and I thought these might work. My broker said they're a bad idea because there's not certain capital growth and no population growth, which I had a chuckle at. I sent a somewhat blunt email back about, you know, your broker doesn't know what they're talking about, and mentioned this to Ed, who flew off his handle about it, screaming data abuse. The funny thing it was, and I have to actually email this investor back tonight and have a bit of a laugh about it, he said, you recommended that broker, and actually the broker is a very, very intelligent person and has just got the opinion about Ashburton without any information and has just made a flippant remark. And you've just got to be really careful because that could have talked someone out of a deal that may have been good. In this instance, it wasn't something I'd recommend, but it may have been a good deal. But because they don't believe in Ashburton, they've put someone else off.
Similar to that, Andrew, for me, it's mortgage brokers who are more specialised in owner-occupier lending and then who try and make out like they're experienced in investing. I mean, the thing is, not all mortgage brokers are equal. There's distribution and variety in terms of quality, but there is also people who specialise in different areas. And just because you're great at writing mortgages for owner-occupier lending and you've got a small client base of people who you know, like that doesn't mean that you're going to be the best mortgage broker for everything. So I think it's important to be able to understand that not all mortgage brokers are created equal and each specialise in different things. Now, I think it's important to ask as well, how do I figure out whether my mortgage broker is any good or not? What are the ways that I can figure this out? Now, we would usually say get a recommendation, but the thing is, you might get a recommendation from somebody who has enjoyed working with a mortgage broker, but who might not actually be able to evaluate whether that mortgage broker has given good advice or not. So here are three questions to ask along with how to evaluate their answers.
So I think the most important one to begin with is ask the broker if they're a property investor, and if so, what type of properties are they investing in? And this goes to kind of my thing that I say quite a lot is that you should be taking advice from someone who's where you want to be. You don't want to take advice from someone that's not where you want to be because they're just not right.
For me, I would always ask as well, how active are they in the property investment community? Look, here's the thing. I don't think you always have to take advice from a broker who's an existing property investor, because if you've got someone who's active in the property investment community, they may still have the knowledge and still have the chops. So let's say that you're dealing with a broker who's 25 years old, but they are sharp, they are reading everything, they're not ready to invest personally yet, but they are very engaged and they specialize in working with investors. Hey, I'd still feel comfortable giving them a go. So if they're not a current property investor, are they active in the property investment community?
Last one, and I think this is a really important one, is which lenders do you work with? Because as we know, lenders can go hot and cold on investors all the time. You want to know that your broker has a range of different options. They might not have every option all of the time, but you know, New Zealand Home Loans, for example, who are great with debt repayment, but have a more limited array of lenders than someone like Tony Mount's Mortgages, for example. And so if you are going to grow your portfolio to a significant level, or if you need multiple banks now, then that is a really important question. Again, you might transition from one to the other, but you need to know that you've got an array of different lenders available at your disposal using that broker.
And look, just before we wrap up, I want to give you 9 questions to ask your broker to prod them to give you advice. So if you're finding that you're not getting good advice from your broker, if you're wanting more, here's 9 questions that you can potentially ask them to try and draw some advice out of them. Since sometimes you just have to ask the right questions in order to get the best answers. So number one, how much can I borrow and how does that amount change across the different banks? Number two, well, how can I increase my potential borrowing? How can I potentially borrow more if that's what you want to do? Number three, well, what options are there outside of the main banks? What options are there with second tier lenders? Can we consider that? Number four, if I'm not ready right now, what should I be doing to get ready? Number five that I reckon you should ask is, Well, should I be fixing short-term or long-term? So that's based around interest rates, and you can have a discussion about your potential for wanting to break a fixed interest rate in the future. Number six, how can I use a revolving credit to help me pay off debt faster? How do I apply that to my situation? Should I keep all of my credit cards? Should I close them, or should I simply lower the limit? And then two last ones, are there any clever ways to access more equity in my portfolio? And my favorite one, is my current loan structure the best for me? How should I be structuring things moving forward? So depending on your situation, you could ask a variety of those questions in order to try and draw good advice out so that you are getting advice for your personal situation that's tailored towards you. Well, I just want to read out one review before we wrap up. This one comes from Keenus, and it says, helping the partners of property investors too, and it's a 5-star review. And they've said, my partner and I are building our portfolio. He's been 90% of the brains and brunt due to my lack of knowledge, but super grateful to Ed and Andrew for bite-sized, enthusiastic, hyper-relevant podcasts, which helped me to catch up and stay informed. Hey, look, we really appreciate as well that you are listening to the show, that you're increasing your knowledge, and that you're allowing us to be part of that journey. So thank you so much. Make sure you tune in tomorrow as well, because we're going to give you an update on the interest tax deductibility changes. Where is the detail? We haven't received it yet. We're going to dig into that tomorrow. And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. Now, one last thing. In a couple of days' time, on Tuesday, we do have our latest webinar. And this is where we're going to be discussing how you can build a portfolio and how to plan it out over the long term. I'm going to drop a link to that in the show notes. Tap, swipe over the cover up, link in there. Or just go to opuspartners.co.nz/webinar. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.